Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. It's no secret that the U.S. biosimilar industry has had a slow start in terms of uptake, but much of that setback is due to barriers caused by originator manufacturers taking advantage of current legislation. Although the Hatch-Waxman Act and the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act, or BPCIA, establish pathways to approval for both generic drugs and biosimilars, there is still much legislative work to be done in order to truly reap the benefits of biosimilars. We sat down with April Breyer Menon, an expert on biosimilar patent law and founder of April Breyer Consulting in Chicago, Illinois, to discuss potential legislation such as the Hatch-Waxman Integrity Act and the Stop Stalling Act that would address barriers to biosimilar market entry. So, April, can you discuss the circumstances that prompted legislators to offer the Hatch-Waxman Integrity Act?
So the Hatch-Waxman Integrity Act deals with the interplay between generic and biosimilar FDA approval pathways and their patent dispute frameworks. So currently, a company seeking to bring a generic or biosimilar drug to market can take advantage of a shortened FDA approval pathway that allows them to rely on some of the data from the reference product's application. For generic drugs, that's called the abbreviated new drug application, or ANDA pathway. And for biosimilars, that is the pathway that's set up under the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act, or the BPCIA. Then patent disputes are guided by frameworks that were set out by Congress. So for generic drugs, we have the Hatch-Waxman framework, and that has patent listings in the Orange Book for the small molecule drug patents. And then it deals with certification letters on which patents may be challenged in litigation and sets up a 30-month stay for the litigation to take place. For the BPCIA, that sets up the patent dance information exchange between the biologic manufacturer and the biosimilar. So starting in 2012, additional patent dispute procedures were introduced called inter partes review and post-grant review, or IPR and PGR proceedings at the patent office. And these are possibly a faster way to challenge drug patents than in the district court. So there was some concern after the IPR and PGR started that they were upsetting the balance that Congress had set out in the patent frameworks, Hatch-Waxman and BPCIA. So the Hatch-Waxman Integrity Act actually seeks to restore that balance by requiring a manufacturer to either choose to use the shortened FDA approval pathways or use an IPR or PGR proceeding. So basically, they can't use both, and the idea is that would kind of reset the balance that Congress intended.
This bill has been stymied in Congress for 15 months now. What are the chances of passage and why?
So this bill has actually been introduced into Congress three different times, as early as June 2018. So the fact that it's been stalled for so long could be concerning for passage, especially since right now it really seems that Congress and the current administration seem to prefer legislation that would decrease drug prices and bring generics and biosimilars to market more quickly. And it's possible that this bill could actually adversely impact that effort by prolonging patent disputes, slowing down the approval of generics and biosimilars. So an example of that would be now a biosimilar manufacturer could file an IPR early on in the product development process, and it could potentially have that IPR invalidate the patent before litigation would even be filed. So it could completely eliminate the need for litigation on that patent. Another challenge of this bill is that it's singling out one particular industry, and it's effectively removing some of the mechanisms that they have to challenge patent validity. This bill may effectively end up shielding small molecule drug patents and biologic drug patents from IPRs completely, just because of the fact that FDA approval is so expensive that the shortened drug pathway for approval would be preferable probably to using an IPR, PGR. So overall, I think that there are a lot of challenges that might come into play to get this bill passed, and especially the sentiment in Congress regarding drug prices and wanting to bring biosimilars and generic drugs to market more quickly.
So whether or not this bill goes anywhere, what would you say are some of its most logical or meaningful elements?
I think that the biggest impact of this bill is that it would potentially eliminate duplicative proceedings. So right now, drug patents could be challenged both at the patent office and in the district court. And I know I gave an example earlier of how that could speed up the process. The IPR was filed before litigation. But the potential concern is that IPRs could actually drag out litigation. So if the litigation is filed first and then an IPR is filed, then the litigation might be stayed while the IPR is decided, and then they have to go back to the litigation. So it can actually cause the disputes to take longer and be more expensive. Another concern is that there are different standards at the patent office and in district court. So you could actually end up having a different patentability determination for the same patent. So a couple of examples of the differing standards would be that there's no presumption of validity at the patent office, and the patent office uses the preponderance of the evidence standard, which is a reduced standard compared to litigation in the district court. Data has actually shown that duplicative proceedings have been a pretty big issue since the creation of IPRs and PGRs. Pataxia did a study of IPRs from when they started in 2012 through the first half of 2017, and they found that almost 80% of IPRs were filed in what they called a defensive proceeding. So that meant they were filed after a district court case had already been filed. So that's the type of ones that tend to drag out the patent litigation longer. We've actually collected some data for Biologics HQ looking at just biologic drug patents, and we found that for those, only 37% of IPRs actually filed on patents that were already in active district court cases, and that would be a district court case between any party. So if you look at only IPRs filed on patents that had been challenged by the same parties, it was actually only 26%. So this doesn't seem to be quite as big of an issue for biologic drug patents as patents as a whole. We did a little bit different analysis for small molecule drug patents in the Orange Book. And for that, we looked at whether a patent had been challenged by both an IPR and in a district court litigation at any time by any party. We found that actually 95% of those patents were challenged in both. If you do that same analysis for biologic drug patents, it's 64%. So you can see that duplicative proceedings at some time or another are an issue. So this bill could actually be somewhat helpful to eliminate those, although it might have a bigger impact on small molecule drugs than biologics.
Moving on to the Stop Stalling Act. This act is intended to prevent the abuse of citizen petitions by innovator drug companies. First of all, what is a citizen petition, and how have these been misused? And additionally, can you discuss how widespread is this practice?
So, citizen petitions are a way for the public to raise scientific and health concerns about drugs that the FDA is reviewing. So, these petitions can either ask that the FDA take some sort of action or refrain from taking action on a particular drug application. The citizen petition process can be misused by people or companies that are filing petitions that don't actually raise a legitimate scientific or health concern, and they only seek to delay FDA action by causing unnecessary investigations. Sometimes they even file a series of these sham petitions just to delay FDA approval for as long as possible. This type of petition does appear to be used in a rather widespread manner. In 2016, Rutgers Law School did a study where they looked at a particular type of citizen petition that would request the FDA take action against a pending generic drug application. And they found in the 4 years before this study that 92% of that type of citizen petition were filed by brand name pharma companies. And then 92% of those were ultimately rejected by the FDA. So that shows that there wasn't an actionable issue in 92% of those petitions that were being filed.
In what ways would this act make sham petitions actionable?
Well, this act creates Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, cause of action against sham petitions as unfair methods of competition. So the act would define a sham petition as a petition or series of petitions that are objectively baseless and attempt to use a governmental process to interfere with the business of a competitor. So it seems to be trying to narrowly tailor it to just this type of sham petition and not any petition, only those that are objectively baseless. It's also going to create a rebuttable presumption of illegality for petitions that the Secretary of Health and Human Services determines were submitted primarily for the purpose of delaying approval of a drug application. And then this act would grant the FTC the authority to seek a civil penalty in district court for any violations of the act.
Has recent FDA guidance on citizen petitions made the Stop Stalling Act redundant?
No, it hasn't. The FDA guidance is separate from the act because the act creates a cause of action for the FTC to bring a case in district court and to seek monetary penalties. The FDA guidance, on the other hand, relates to how the FDA will actually handle the citizen petition. So it describes how the FDA will determine whether it will delay a drug application's approval because it's actually necessary to protect the public health, or whether the FDA can just summarily deny the petition because on its face, it doesn't raise a valid scientific or regulatory issue. So really the guidance and the act would work hand in hand, with the FDA having the ability to summarily deny the petition if it's a sham, and then the FTC would then be able to go to district court and seek penalties for filing that petition. This legislation appears to have bipartisan support already advanced in both houses of Congress, and we can see from the FDA guidance that the FDA is aware of this issue and has taken it up and tried to make strides towards preventing these. So it really seems that for this particular legislation that there are very few challenges at the moment.
Thank you to April for your insights, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes, and until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.